Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2020. This is the final stream of the eighth night. So we're about halfway through at this point, I think. And this one is with Endeavor. So Endeavor is a Canadian YouTuber. Many of you will know him already. But Endeavor, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello. Thank you for having me on again this year, Woz. This is the third year in a row, and I always enjoy this every year. It's a great great Christmas tradition. You know, it's kind of like the dissident right Christmas party, and I'm glad I got my invitation this year. I'm a right-wing reactionary video maker. I talk about metapolitics, philosophy, history, and I've tried to get a lot more into culture recently, but you know, I try to also keep my head in reality and take on the issues that are confronting people in the day-to-day. But you know, I also like to give people some positive messaging to go along with that, so it's not just constantly black pills.
Yeah, well, that is the danger, of course, because we do live in very serious times and very serious things are going on, and it's very easy to get lost in that. So I think you probably have a lot to say about this year, which has been an incredible year, in not in a good way. But I wanted to ask you, the title of your latest video, which I haven't had a chance to watch, is 2020, the year the facade of liberalism fell. Let me just check. The year the facade of liberalism fell. So can you explain to people what you meant by that title? And hopefully that will lead us into a discussion of the year 2020.
Yeah, so I've been making videos, anti-enlightenment, anti-liberal videos, reactionary videos for the last few years about various liberal concepts and, you know, why they're either false or why they're misleading or why they don't really exist in the real world. And what I felt was, I mean, I'm not someone who likes to feel vindicated about predicting something bad would happen and then that thing actually happening. But I feel that a lot of the things that people like you and I have been saying about the current system for the last few years really came into light. It really came into the open for all to see this year. And I guess the takeaway from this year is that the various liberal promises that the West has made to its citizens, especially for the last 75 years, mostly since the end of the Second World War, and in America in particular, the principles which have legitimized America as the world superpower, it's really trampled upon almost every single one of those this year. And I think that the takeaway from this year should be, for anyone who hasn't figured this out already, it's that we're not really living in a liberal, open society where we have like a set of rights and free and fair elections and the government is limited in power and that there's rule of law. What we are really living in is a technocratic, neoliberal, intersectional anarcho-tyranny. And I think that we're kind of entering a new context, one where kind of the past facade, because I think that a lot of this has been in place for a while, and we can get into that, but I think that that facade has kind of fell, and we really see what we're up against this year. I think that's what 2020, that's the lesson I think we should be taking away from it.
That's a very interesting way to look at it, and I think you're right. Another thing that people used to assume about Western society was that they were in control of their governments, not the other way around. And I think that this, you know, certain events recently in America have shown that actually there is a machine that gets what it wants, and it's not the public.
Yes, exactly. We used to call this the cathedral. Now, I'm from an NRX background, like many other guests here. I kind of have a lot of reservations about that. I kind of actually look back onto that, and I think I do kind of disagree with some of the assessments of it. I do think that this machine we're up against, the cathedral, if you want to use that term, it is a lot more conscious, and it definitely has a very deliberate agenda in mind. It definitely involves things like the groups that we can't mention on YouTube, woke capital, globalism, and various forces. We really see those at work in 2020, and I mean, we could just go into any number of examples. Like we could go into the COVID example, how just the role of mass media in that, or BLM, the U.S. elections, what we can say about that on YouTube. I mean, just for example, like everything this year has been media driven. And I think it's like, it's impossible to underestimate just how much power the international news media really has. They kind of have like the ability at this point to shape people's perception of reality. I think that certainly showed itself in all these crises of the last year. And this is something that people have to remember in the West. We have absolutely zero control over the news media. It is not democratically elected. There's no way to challenge it. At least not on the certain scale that they have. I mean, we can look at the tech platforms now. They're kicking us all off all these big tech platforms. So the apparatus, which is shaping people's perception of reality, is controlled by these multinational corporations in which the public has absolutely no say in how these things are run.
Yeah, and this signals a completely different society from the one that we thought we were living in. The assumption of liberty and freedom and personal sovereignty was there. It was kind of central to the Western life, to Western civilization. And I think perhaps the scariest realization from this year is that there are people in power and they don't care about your sovereignty and they don't care about your liberty. They don't care about your opinion. They see you as a consumer. And the real question going forward is, do they actually even need you as a consumer? I think that's a very scary question, but I think it's going to be one of these ones that's going to come up in the next few years. Do they actually need us? Because they are talking about population control and population reduction. And I think they've decided that they don't really need us that much anymore.
And especially, I think that they have, we also have to mention that there is a racial element to it, that they specifically have pointed out white people as the group on the chopping block that they actively want to get rid of. I mean, I don't think you can chalk it up. I mean, what can we say on YouTube? I don't think you can chalk this up to, bad ideas or someone just having good intentions but being misled. And this is kind of one of, to get on a point I said earlier, this is kind of one of the things that I do disagree with a lot of the NRX theories about, is that, like, you know, it's all from good intentions. It's kind of like this Christian heresy, but I don't think that's the case really. I think that like there actively are people in power that do want our us gone, really, to just not exist anymore. And I mean, just look at like the existential attack that happened this year. So, I mean, what's so uncanny about the current reigning order is that you can think of oppressive regimes in the past. Like you could say the Armenians under the in the Ottoman Empire were oppressed by the Ottoman Empire. And I hate using the word oppression, but you get the point. It just seems so weird, though, like just with the images they're putting in the advertising, how all of our heritage is ironic now. They're rewriting our history. They're tearing down the statues. It's just such like this existential attack. And it's just coming from all those angles. And that's really kind of disturbing because, you often think that when people think of oppression or tyranny or genocide, even, you always think of some like guy with an officer hat and a baton, like cracking people over the head and, trains and stuff like that and crowds being fired on. You never think that it's going to come from Twitter. You never think that, McDonald's is going to be out there trying to rile up a bunch of rioters in your city. Like I tweeted a joke earlier this year, is that imagine you went back in time 20 years and said, yeah, that internet thing that you're using, that new internet thingy that you're using to send messages to people, 20 years from now, Oreo cookies are going to be using this thing to try to turn you transgendered. This is the reality yes. We're in.
Yeah. And I think up until about 10 years ago, maybe less, 5 years ago, a right winger could have been forgiven for thinking that the big corporations were actually still were on his side. It's only in the last 5 years or so that it's become apparent that they're really not. They're not what we thought they were, or they're not what we were told they were. We were told in the 80s and 90s that corporations were right wing, racist, sexist, and so on, and Christian. Run by Christian white men, and they're bigoted and all that. But actually, no, they're not. They're not right wing. They're not conservative. They're not, definitely not traditional. they are, in some senses, they must be right wing because you know, the making of money from capital is, I don't know if is that right wing in itself.
Well, I would say no, to be honest. Depends on how you define right wing, but.
But at any rate, the more important thing is that in their terms of their social attitudes, they're absolutely on board with progressivism, but with what used to be the preserve of the far left. The corporations, on all of them that we could name, are now in lockstep with the far left on everything, mass immigration, multiculturalism, LGBT, feminism, and so on.
Yeah, you know, one thing I another joke I told is that there is nothing more likely in the world if you see someone who calls themselves an anarcho-communist, there is nothing more certain in the world that they're going to agree with Jeff Bezos on 99% of issues. You know, like and even like with the far left, like they're in lockstep with the corporation. So, you know, the Antifa guys on the street, they don't. The person that they hate, it's not the investment banker in New York who works for Goldman Sachs. It's the poor working class white guy living in Alabama because he put up a Confederate flag in his on his trailer. And they hate him infinitely more. And it's very clear that they basically want him to not exist. And it's just and you'll just see that the corporations are in complete lockstep with them. And it, with a lot of these leftists, it just never occurs to them. But, you know, what I think what we've seen in the last year also is that a lot of the various forces that have been kind of pushing us in one direction, they've kind of all culminated. So, you know, you had the Antifa before, you had the corporations, you had the social media companies, and now there's this COVID thing, which you wouldn't think would have anything to do with the far left or anti-racism or globalism or stuff like that. But it's just uncanny how this COVID thing has now been incorporated into the symbology of progressivism. It's really quite strange.
It's incredible. And it does seem to be, I mean, we can talk about whether the left-right spectrum is still pertinent, but it does seem to, at any rate, the COVID thing plugs straight into the, it's appealing to the very same people who want gay rights, feminism, multiculturalism, mass immigration, pro the EU, and so on. It's all off a piece. And whereas the opposition to it is among the same people who are more traditional or more ethnocentric, traditionally, things that are attributed to the right wing. I don't know why that is. Do you have any ideas about that?
Well, I think that the reason for that is because it's just been picked up by the cathedral that COVID has become, you know, part of their messaging, and that a lot of these leftists, their entire inner dialogue is just whatever the mainstream media says. So, you know, a lot of them flipped on a dime. A lot of them, we may forget this, but back in February, March, they were saying, go hug a Chinese person to show how not racist you were. Before COVID had entered the West, when it was still only in China. But then it just flipped on a dime. And then the same shitlibs would go a week later to say that if you're going for a walk in a 2 kilometer large park with a 2 square kilometer park by yourself, completely alone, well, we're going to send you these drones to stalk you, and we're going to shame you on Twitter and call you a COVIDiot. And it just seems like they're so in lockstep with the messaging that comes out. And, you know, I think that we do run the risk of being too conspiratorial with the COVID stuff. I mean, I do have a bit of a different perspective because I actually did get to experience it outside the West at a point this year.
No, please talk about that experience. That might be interesting to look.
Okay. Yeah. So, I was in Russia. I've been back and forth there for the last couple of years, with work. And, you know, they still have like restrictions there. They still have like on the metro mask wearing and stuff, but like I never felt like it was an issue though, that was divisive. Like I never felt like someone was going to scream at me for, you know, not wearing a mask or not social distancing and stuff like that. It didn't become like something that just tears society apart, just, socially, just as progressivism does. And the other thing is you just see that no one gives a shit about it there. Like for a while, people were taking it seriously. Then after a while, just like no one I know there takes it seriously. I knew two or three people who got sick, and they were sick for a couple, maybe a week or so. And then after that, they just went back to life as normal. So, it's definitely a thing. I don't think that it was something that was created just for, this agenda.
No, I think. I don't think so either.
Yeah. What I think happened was, there was a decision made some point in March, because they did flip on a dime. They were still allowing flights in from China. I think that they decided, okay, this will be our issue. We can't get them with the climate change stuff. We tried Greta Thunberg last year. Yeah, you remember that name? I don't either. Yeah. But they tried Greta Thunberg last year. They tried with the climate change stuff. And I think that didn't work. And then they got their COVID one and they said, yes, this is our issue that we're going to just use as the casus belli, I think that's how you pronounce it, to just clamp down on everything. And the other countries outside the West have taken precautions, but it hasn't become a religion. China is not acting like this. I know that they had like really strict lockdowns at the beginning, but you don't get the set. I haven't been to China, but you saw the video from Wuhan and it just looks like life is normal. I mean, it's not becoming like just so ingrained in the political dialectic, like the arguments.
It was a problem. They enacted a solution and now it's over and now they're back to normal. We are being told there is no going back to normal. This is the new normal. And this is a problem that's never going to go away.
And what's another thing, I didn't actually mention this in the video because it's not really an indictment against the principles of liberalism, so to say. But another thing that I think we really need to hammer home, though, is just how cancerous the social climate in the West really is. Because, from my experience outside the West, like, I don't feel like people in these non-Western countries hate each other. But, like, COVID is another issue. And just like the BLM and the elections and stuff, just everything is just used as ammunition for each side to just fire at the other ones. And you can't ever really like solve any crisis. Cause let's say like there actually was a real, there actually was a real threat that people really needed the government to step in and take seriously. A lot of people now wouldn't even listen because they've cried wolf one too many times. Like there is just zero trust left, and every single negative thing that happened, it's just used as cannon fodder now in this endless political back and forth.
Yeah, and that is sustained by what I think is an emerging religious faith or a perversion of religious faith.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether you're a good person or not is measured by whether you take this all very seriously or not. Your degree of commitment to to fighting COVID is seen as the measure of your virtue as a person.
Yeah. And you know, what I often want, like this was a disagreement I had with a couple of the NRX guys. The theory from those days was that progressivism is a Calvinist heresy. So like it evolved out of English Protestantism and Quakerism. But I don't agree with that because it feels like the religion that we're up against is one that's been manufactured to deliberately advance a political agenda, because most religions, I mean, pretty much all of them that I can think of, at least all the prominent ones, they were developed out of a genuine search for truth and goodness in the world. But this progressivism is one that was, I think, designed with a political goal in mind, and the tenets are just lined up to whatever is the most effective at bringing about that goal. So, you know, when some people, and I've had this argument with people before, like they'll try to hammer down like what the left believes about gender and then deconstruct their belief and show them why you're wrong. And I just say, like, you're wasting your time. They believe whatever is the most destructive at any given moment. So, you know, baby, it's cold outside is evil, horrible rape culture one minute because it's this, cheerful song that a lot of white people enjoy that about a lot of like authentic human emotions. So they hate that. And so it's evil, horrible patriarchy. But then the WAP song from this year, it's great because it's a black artist and she's so amazing because she's black or whatever. I don't even know who it's by. They just change the goalpost to whatever is the most politically beneficial at this point. And The religion of progressivism, the phony religion of progressivism, it judges morality by ideological conformity. So you're not a good person by doing good deeds. You're not a good person by loving your neighbor or believing in God or something like that. You're a good person by if you believe in white privilege. You're a good person if you believe that black people are oppressed in the West. You're a good person if you support LGBT rights, and anyone who does not support that is just like scum of the earth and worthy of any kind of violence, character assassination, deplatforming, ruining their employment. They're deserving of all that. I made a video this year on BitChute only, which was called the twisted morality of anti-racism. And I'm of the belief that the left, they think that what they call racism, meaning anything that's good for white people as a group, they think that's worse than murder. What would you say to that?
Yes. Well, at this point, yes, it almost, I don't know whether they would explicitly say it, racism is worse than murder. And of course, you've got to bear in mind that what they mean by racism is nothing more than white people preferring the company of white people or wanting to live in a white area or something. It just things that every other ethnic group does, you know, as a matter of course. I don't know whether your average leftist would say that is even worse than murder, but they do behave as if it's murder is not a systemic thing. Murder is a freak occurrence, whereas white racism is bred into us and it's ingrained in the culture and it's ingrained in the education system, which is actually far leftist, and it's in the media, which is actually far leftist. But that seems to be their delusion, that the entire culture, all of Western society, and in every Western country, is innately systemically racist, and so it's an ongoing and constant and pervasive social menace and problem and sin. Whereas a murder is just some freak occurrence.
There was two things that spurred me onto this thought. It was a thread that I saw on Twitter from last year, which I don't know who posted it, so I can't attribute it to them, but they went over the Ten Commandments, and they said that other than murder, you're basically punished harder for racism than violating the other 10, all nine of the other 10 commandments. And the other thing was two news stories I saw this summer. One of them was after Cannon Hinnant was murdered, the young boy in, I think it was North Carolina, who was just shot point blank in the head by a black man, by their neighbor. The mother felt it necessary to say her 5-year-old son wasn't racist. And I don't blame the mother because I know the climate that she's saying that in, but just you have to internalize the fact that a mother of a 5-year-old boy who was just murdered point blank, gunshot wound to the head, felt it necessary to say that her son was not racist, as if, you know, he fit the left's definition of racist. Let's say he preferred, like he was afraid of the black neighbor or something like that, and he preferred playing with the white kids or something. I mean, that's implying that he deserved to be murdered for that. Or the other one was the man who was drop kicked in the head in Portland, the video, which thankfully he survived. But the New York Post, I think it was, they had a news article that said, man who was kicked shared anti-BLM memes on Facebook days earlier. And what it's implying is that, like...
Yes, exactly. Why report that at all?
Yeah, like it's implying that attempted murder, which very possibly could have killed him, was not as morally bad as him posting these, him not supporting BLM. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, it's completely nuts. And again, I think that this is something that we're going to have to learn to stop being shocked about, even though it is shocking, even though it is amazing. I think we're going to have to somehow navigate to a position where we're not surprised by this anymore, and we just take it for granted that, yes, there is this religious zeal attached to basically hating white people. Yeah. It's not really... But I also wonder, and this is something that's come up this year, I also wonder whether the goal is the extinction of white people, or whether that's just a sort of something that had to be done on the... Like, discrediting our institutions, discrediting us, and so on. Was that just something that had to be done on the road to what is now emerging, a globalist oligarchic control, to use E. Michael Jones's phrase. Because I do wonder, do they actually care? Like, do the oligarchs, the powers that be, do they actually care what race we are? if we're subordinate, if we're subservient to them, does it matter? I wonder.
Well, I think it does, because they're very conscious about even like the most small things. Like, they're not publishing any music that, you know, would be called white music. I know they'll say that there's no such thing, but or just like look at all the just look at all the pamphlets, look at all the advertisements and the messages there. I mean, there was this article on the Occidental Observer that they went through all these advertisements and pamphlets for these banks and companies, and they basically, the white man was just gone now. yeah, it's just such an existential attack. But I think that the response is, yes, you're right, we have to stop being shocked about this, because I mean, I've already believed that this was their agenda for the last 2 years, I'd say. But what I say is that we have to make a moral argument against it, because we are very moralistic people. You know, we like to think that we're on the side of good, and you have to hammer home the point that what they're telling you is moral and good is actually a form of evil. And we have to, and I think that's what you have to do with this, is that, you know, under what morality is, you know, sharing a Facebook post about, which probably was factually correct, because we all know that George Floyd and that story was not entirely truthful. And under what morality does that warrant someone like drop kicking you in the head, hospitalizing you? And I think that's the message you got to put forth. In terms of the COVID one, I know we kind of got sidetracked, but it seems that they've now like incorporated that into the religion. So like not wanting to fight COVID enough is now like another one of these sins that that they've incorporated into their religion. But it's important to remember that they still put the anti-racism one above the COVID one. Like, a point that I made in the video was that they've declared COVID a morally equivalent to war. So one of the points I made in the video is that liberty under liberalism is dead. It's not a free society anymore. They're able to confine the people to their homes for weeks on end. Like, they've made it illegal to go for a walk in the park, for God's sakes. So there's just no way that it's a society with liberty, but they justify it under moral equivalency to war. So they say, okay, this COVID thing is a threat. It's a threat that we have to suspend civil liberties in order to fight. And that is not always illegitimate. But then you have to remember, I know this is like the most obvious take in the world, that just days after it had been illegal for, you know, 10 people to meet in a park, tens of thousands of people were gathering in major cosmopolitan cities in America and across the West for these BLM protests. And we even had a media which told us that they told us that these did not contribute to the spread of the virus. And there were even some news reports. This was, I mean, it's unbelievable, but there were even some that said that the BLM rallies reduced the amount of COVID. It helped stop the spread of COVID. I mean, it's just crazy.
How on earth? I mean, that is just incredible. If an anti-COVID demo would increase the exposure of COVID, how does a BLM demo not increase the exposure of COVID? That is absolutely insane.
Yeah, and the point I made in the video, though, is that they've also made the cause of anti-racism, which should just be called anti-whitism, they've made this cause morally equivalent to war as well. And this one supersedes the COVID one. So if it's seen as fighting racism, what they consider racism, it's put above the supposed crisis of COVID and above the law as well. The other point I wanted to make was that rule of law in the West is dead now. When you see that there's these riots in America that are just allowed to go with either the complacency of the authorities or in some cases, the aiding and abetting of the authorities. So, I mean, like, you could go through plenty of examples, like the mayor of Minneapolis just telling the police to stand down and allow the rioters to burn the police building in the precinct, or like allowing Chaz to go on for 3 weeks, this anarchist zone in Seattle, like, complete violations of the law. But rule of law doesn't exist anymore if it's
anarcho-tyranny.
Anarcho-tyranny, that's the term for it.
So what would you say is the plan here for the, you know, not our plan, I mean the powers that be, you know, whatever, globalists, oligarchs, etc. Do you think, and I'll just put a hypothesis to you. I'm not saying whether I believe this or not, just curious what you think. Do you think that they're deliberately creating discord and an unpredictable, obviously unfair situation, like with the demos, that kind of stuff, and encouraging certain groups to be very agitated against white people, and possibly even creating a thing with COVID that is obviously false, so that some people will be pissed off about it? Do you suspect that they're doing all of this with some kind of goal in mind?
Well, it's hard to say. Like, I think that the end goal of globalism is to have a small ruling class, which will have, like, you know, some ethnic interests involved, which we can't talk about. But not only that, you know, there's also a bunch of Gentile elites who will also be part of this high billionaire class, you know, the Bezoses and of the world, is to have a small ruling class dominate over a low IQ, mixed race, you know, black or brown consumer class, who basically their entire identity is just consumption. They work for very low wages. They live in pods and eat bugs, and their entire life is just, you know, watching Netflix or Marvel or something like that. I think that's the end goal of globalism. In terms of the in terms of what we've seen in the last year, to be honest, I didn't expect it really. So I do feel like, because I don't want to totally blackball people, I do feel like this is kind of desperation for them. Now, I don't think that, like, they're about to lose power tomorrow. I don't think that's the case. But one thing I was saying about a year or two ago, and I was actually proven wrong about this, is that what I was saying was that the 2020 election won't matter because come 2024, Texas will go blue, and then the Democrats will have complete control of America forever. And you know, they're playing the long game on this one, and they know what they're doing. But it seems that this year they have put all their cards on the table, and I got to think it's waking people up. I mean, it certainly is. I mean, my numbers certainly went up despite YouTube choking my channel out. Plenty of people have reported the same thing. I think it is, a lot of it is desperation. I do think that they realize that their position in power is not quite as secure as it once was. And I think that a lot of the stuff they're doing now is, I don't think that it necessarily is, in their best, well, maybe it is, but it seems like they realize that they might not actually have such a grip on power as they once did. Because the point I made in the video is that they tell us that these regimes are legitimate because they're liberal democracies and we have freedom and equality and stuff like that, but they've trampled upon every single thing that they've claimed gives them legitimacy in the last year. So I do think there is, like, a lot of desperation. It kind of does seem like the flailing arms of a the flailing of an injured animal. Now, I don't want to get too optimistic right away, because I do think that we are headed into a more dangerous situation in the West, but it is one that I don't think that the position of the elites is as solid as it might have been a while back.
That is an interesting thesis. When do you think it became apparent to them that their grip on power was not as secure as they'd thought? Do you have any idea of a timeline here?
Maybe, I'm not great on economics. Maybe 2008, when there was an economic crisis. But I tend to think maybe it might have been when the Great Awakening happened, because that woke plenty of people up. The Great Awakening, for anyone who doesn't know, 2014, when social justice politics just, like, went off the rail. That's when, you know, the SJW became a household word. And, you know, you had all this, like, SJW versus anti-SJW stuff. You have to remember that stuff was all planned. I think it, like, kicked off with the first wave of BLM with the Trayvon Martin situation back in 2013, I think that was. 2013, 2014. But you can even look in the New York Times and, like, or any mainstream media paper, they have these graphs that graph the use of the word racism or oppression or LGBT. And, like, the number just goes, like, exponentially up post 2014. And then I also think that for them, things like Brexit and Trump were a legitimate shock for them. They weren't expecting that to happen. And I think that that did rustle their feathers quite a bit. So, you know, I think that I am optimistic that I don't think that the reigning elite will, the reigning order is going to be in power forever. Now, having said that, I think that it's going to get more dangerous in the next, you know, few years. as long as it goes on for. And then B, you also have to remember that I'm not pro accelerationism and stuff like this, because you have to remember that we have to actually have something in place that we can bring in for when it all comes down, because, you know, just that the system falling apart does not equal us winning by default. We have to remember that.
Yes. Yes. And there were people that when this whole COVID thing took off, there were people saying that this was a great opportunity for dissidents because, we could make use of it because it shows up globalism because it's happening because of open borders. So therefore, this is a chance. And also it's showing up the failings in the system that it can't keep up with this virus. And therefore it discredits globalism. And that's a chance for, you know, anti-globalist people to make some points. But as it happened, that the system rapidly got control of the situation and dissidents didn't make those gains that they were expecting, that they were hoping to make. And I think that's that speaks both of the robustness and versatility or adaptability of the system, but also it speaks of the lack of those things among the dissident right.
Yeah, I think that this year a lot of trust in government and trust in the media, it is going down. That's an opportunity for us. One of the problems we also have, though, is that eventually what we will need is an apparatus of some kind of media, some organizations which actually present a narrative for us, because there are a lot of people that are pissed off right now. But the problem is, and Morgoth made a really good video on this, is that you'll get a lot of people who are angry about the situation, but they have completely different narratives about what's actually going on and what the solutions are. And this is a big problem we have, like, especially with COVID. I found, like, you know, some of the conspiracy theories did just go, like, off the walls for me. Like, I think that the masks, for example, like, it's the symbology of COVID. It's the symbol that, like, says you're complying. Do I think that they were brought in, they had this in mind deliberately as, like, their way to take away our bodily autonomy so that when they were forcing us down to take the vaccine? I don't think that's exactly what it was. So, you know, I find like a lot of us are going a bit too far, or like with the vaccines, like, look, there's no way I'm taking the Pfizer one until I've seen hundreds of millions of people take it and we know it's safe. But vaccines are, you know, good science. So, like, you know, a lot of people are saying on Twitter, like, all vaccines are bad, which I don't think is really true. So we have to be really careful, both, you know, people who are voices, you have to be really careful, the messages that you send out, because, you know, like, I mean, I'm not a huge voice, but I could say something on Twitter that's ridiculous. And then, you know, not a huge amount of people, maybe there could be like 10 people out there that now start believing that. And that's a problem for us. So I think eventually we do need kind of a voice of authority from our side that, you know, people can actually look to, like another example is something like QAnon. Like, I think that was a huge waste of time. It was obviously fake, but it had huge
waste of time, waste of energy, and waste of faith.
Yeah. And Blackpill put a chart of the Google searches for QAnon, comparing them to Nick Fuentes, someone who I genuinely respect. I think he's doing great work. I have really liked what I've seen from the America First movement. But then you see that QAnon, like, just blew the numbers, like, out of the water. Like, it's not even close. Like, the amount of Google searches for Nick Fuentes compared to QAnon. Like, QAnon is just off the charts for that one, but it's just a complete dead end, really. It was fake, waste of time, waste of energy, and it goes to show that unless we actually have, like, some respectable bodies from the right wing giving off messages, people will, you know, follow their discontent with the system into dead ends like QAnon. So I think that is one of the things we really need to hammer down in the next year or so.
Yes. I'm not sure what to say about that. I think it would be good if there were some kind of way to combat these things, but it's very possible, and I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist tinfoil hat wearer, but it is possible that QAnon was created from within the system so as to just occupy people.
Yeah, I did see a lot of the mainstream media posting about it. It did kind of also become like their way of saying that, haha, look, anyone who is questioning the system right now, which I think it's just anyone who's not one of these, you know, shit lib leftists who's just, you know, completely high off of BuzzFeed and The Guardian. I think everyone's questioning it. But QAnon was something they could point to as, like, everyone that doesn't agree with the mainstream narrative is insane. And unfortunately, it kind of worked.
Well, yeah. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not saying that it was deliberately created by the establishment or whatever, by the powers that be, but I'm saying it just wouldn't be surprising if that were the case, because it did put people to sleep. All these, what are they, Trump fans, MAGA fans, who, it was something for them to believe in for an entire 4 years. And that meant that they didn't, whenever Trump seemed to be failing and seemed to be going against his promises and all that, these people could just be put back to sleep. They would otherwise have got rowdy and annoyed and so on. But instead, there was QAnon to constantly tranquilize them.
Mm-hmm. So I think that, we are being given a mainstream narrative that doesn't make sense. But we eventually do need a coherent one that makes sense from our side. And to have that, I think you need a reputable right-wing organization. And I think we have a few that are growing, but they're nowhere near big enough yet that actually is able to put forth a counter narrative. And that's why I encourage people to support groups like American Renaissance or Countercurrents or America First, things like that. I think that we definitely need to have organizations which put forth a narrative for us.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose that an obvious question would be, what do you predict this is going to develop into next year? I mean, do you think that the vaccine is going to be pretty much universally taken?
Well, I don't know. I mean, at this point, nothing would surprise me. I certainly didn't predict this year. I think they're probably just going to keep it going on. They're going to say, this new strain of the UK, well, the vaccine doesn't work now. Because they're even putting out the messages now that, they're preparing you for it. They're saying that, well, even after the vaccine, we're still going to have to social distance. Or even after the vaccine, we're still going to have to wear masks or stuff like that. Well, then what's the bloody point of the vaccine in the first place if we still need to do all this? So they're going to, I think they're going to try to drag it out even longer. I just don't see when it's going to end until, I guess, just people are just no longer abide by the COVID rules.
Do you think that will happen? Do you think that will happen? Do you think that people will grow tired of the COVID thing?
I think yes. I mean, my experience, what I saw in Russia was that no one takes it seriously there. Nobody I know actually is afraid of COVID. Even the 72-year-old guy who got sick, but he's back out into life as normal. Even though I heard that they're actually going to be doing lockdowns there again. But in terms of the West, yeah, more people are, there is a lot more hysteria in the West, but I do feel like more people are starting to say, okay, we kind of have to go back to life as normal with that one. But yeah, I don't know. Because they're already giving us the ideas that even when we get this vaccine, you're still going to have to continue the stuff. So I don't see it ending soon. I'd like it to, but.
Well, that's exactly the point, isn't it? That it looks like the authorities want to keep it going. They're saying even after the vaccine, you'll still have to wear the mask. But also now there's a new strain. So even the vaccine isn't enough. You're going to have to keep wearing the mask, but you're also going to get a second vaccine. And this is just, so it's like they've lulled people into this constant state of vulnerability. Or imagined, what you might, they believe themselves to be vulnerable, whether they are or not.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's also another thing we can point out is just the stupidity of a lot of the messaging coming out. The top Canadian doctor, put that in quotations this year, said that people should wear a mask while having sex. I'm not even joking. That actually was legitimate medical advice put out by the Canadian government. And, I don't know, see how anyone can actually listen to that and take that seriously. But, it still goes on, But
it reminds me of Naked Gun. I think it was the third Naked Gun film where they have all body condoms because that's the only way to practice truly safe sex. I mean, it's that absurd. It's saying you've got to wear a mask. I mean, come on. This is absurd. And I wonder if there is a couple anywhere in the West who have actually done that now. I wonder, is there anyone who's done that?
Maybe some bug man transgender couple in San Francisco, but other than that, probably not.
Tragic. just tragic.
Or even like putting the tape on the park benches. Like, that's one that I just like, what? Oh, so two people might sit beside each other, and then that's what's going to give. It's like, give me a break.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we'll move on to the super chats now. Okay. This has been an interesting discussion, but this is the fifth stream that I've done today, so I am quite tired, as you might expect. Okay, so Alan Bastard MP says, thanks for your efforts, re-millennial, again this year. Thank you very much, Alan. It's a pleasure and a privilege. And Gaius Valerius Lepidus says, merry millennial to you both, MW and Endeavour. What is your most cosy and favourite part of Christmas dinner? Childhood memories, please.
Oh.
Change of subject there.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's something I'm going to miss this year. I'm not going to see my family on Christmas. I think probably just sitting around the table with what my family would do is that my mother, father, and brother, we would go visit our aunt and uncle and their kids, and then maybe some of our other family members would come over. And it was always just this great dinner, turkey dinner with Yorkshire puddings and mashed potatoes and just all the good stuff. And I don't know, it's just that feeling of togetherness that you just don't really get any other time of the year, maybe other than Thanksgiving, which is another holiday I really do miss from Canada. I didn't get to experience this year because of all this nonsense. Just the feeling of togetherness at Christmas dinner. You know, it's just one great experience. I love it every year, but didn't get it this year.
Well, I'm sorry, Endeavor. That is just sad. But I mean, I won't be with family either. For what it's worth. Okay, from Mr. and Mrs. Lepidus, can we just take a moment to say that, Colin, you have done an excellent job with Millennial 2020. You have gone through a lot this year, and it's really nice to see you doing what you do best. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that sentiment and that donation. Very, very kind of you. All right, and now the final one, unless there are any other questions or super chats, please get them in now if you do have any. Zed Dez says, hail to my Canadian compatriot Endeavour. Manipulating human behaviour for the benefit of a few is as old as the pharaohs. Consider having Scottish professional musician and philosopher Alan Watts of Cutting Through the Matrix to discuss this on Millennial 2021. I'm not sure if I know him or I know the name, but I know that there are two guys with that name. But yes, I'll look into that. So thank you for that suggestion. So Endeavour, manipulating human behaviour for the benefit of a few is as old as the pharaohs. Do you have anything to say about that?
I think it's true to a degree, but you know, at the same time, like I'm not somebody who disagrees with the idea of religion or an elite or something like that. I do think that, could you say that Christianity manipulated people's behavior? Yeah, I think you could, but I think that ultimately it was healthy. It guided them towards a healthy lifestyle, whereas I don't think it's ever been quite as sinister as it is today. I think even, you know, communism didn't crush, you know, the human spirit quite as much as progressivism has. You know, it's like what Jonathan Bowden said, communism breaks the body, liberalism crushes the soul. I hazard to say that, like, every single time, every single elite has always been horrible and manipulative, because I do think elites and aristocracy and hierarchy, and then, you know, various like religious beliefs and social norms are good things if they create a healthy society. I just think the ones we have today are illegitimate.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's, I mean, we're looking at an age when it's also never been so possible to control such huge numbers of people with quite easy means. I mean, you know, social media, I mean, these huge infrastructures that have been built for that, for those platforms, means that you can transmit a message and censor contrary messages very easily in this day and age, and that will affect literally millions of people. And I don't think that power has ever been known globally before. Obviously, it's been known within nations, but never at this level of granularity, I don't think. And there's absolutely been control. I mean, of course there has. That's, hierarchy is part of life, and and it's part of human social existence. So it's there. It's always been a thing. But I think the difference is that our, well, first of all, our elites today seem to have contempt for the public and want at least one part of the public destroyed. And also, our elites today are obviously dishonest on numerous things. And I do think that climate change is the prototype for COVID. As you said earlier, I think that was a very true, you just said it casually, but I think it's a key point here. Because climate change was, I mean, that was going in 2006, 7, 8, and then it got killed stone cold by the global financial crisis in 2008. But in 2007, it was approaching this hysteria that we're seeing today with COVID. It just wasn't as cleverly implemented. It wasn't as manifest as we see now with COVID, which is interesting because COVID has happened much faster. You know, we're talking about it's all within 9 months, or well, 10 months, whereas climate change, they had years to plan that.
And don't forget, in October 2019, like that Greta Thunberg girl, she was everywhere. Like,
oh, yes, every... came back. Yeah, I should say that climate change came back more recently, but it's yeah, yeah. Sorry, you say what you want to say.
Well, no, I mean, it's just like they were really hammering that one home, like really hard. And then it just seems like, at least what I think happened, I can't be certain about this, is that they saw the COVID and they said, okay, we're going to go with this one.
Exactly. That's exactly what I think happened. And I think that they'd used their experience, much in the way that other systems of influence had been refined over the years in other countries and then used in Ireland all at once in a very refined form, as I said earlier to John Waters. In the same way, I think systems of influence regarding climate change and what people should do and how they can get involved and why it's a moral cause and who to hate and why to hate them, the systems that the techniques that they devised for that with climate change over the last 10 or 15 years were suddenly used in a very refined state-of-the-art form regarding a completely different thing, namely COVID. And you see the effectiveness. I mean, it's extraordinarily effective. In the course of 10 months, as I was saying to John Waters, people's expectations of life have been transformed. Their expectations of what it is to be involved in society, what their idea of civic duty is, to be a citizen, even to be a friend, to be an employee or an employer. All of these things have been revised over the course of the last 10 months, and it's astonishing. It's really just incredible.
What's just so uncanny, I thought, is just how they're putting this stuff in advertisement now. So all these like weird... all these weird stock photos that you see when you're scrolling through Facebook on the sponsored ads, which always have the infamous mixed race couples now, and then they always look transgendered or something. Now they all have the masks on. So it's like they've incorporated it into the imagery that they're bombarding you with, the imagery of globalism. It's just been like just shoved in there, and it's just like natural now. It is really quite strange.
Yeah, I think so. It's a truly bizarre and, well, it's a truly interesting time that we're living in. Let's leave it at that. So, all right. Well, any final thoughts before we close?
Yeah, I guess I'll finish by saying, if you're thinking of what we need to do, I'd say definitely financially support an organization that you feel is respectable and that is advancing ideas that you believe in. Try to socialize as much as possible. I know that can be difficult, but you really got to keep human contact because, you know, I can live without a new iPhone and stuff. I can't live like being locked in my apartment for 24 hours a day. Try to socialize as much as you can. Doesn't have to be political, but just, you know, and then I'd also say, if you're in one of these liberal cities, I'd suggest getting out because I think these cities are going to destroy themselves. Find a good area, find a good community there, and hope for the best, but plan for the worst. And I just want to say also, thanks for having me on Millennia Yule this year. I always enjoy it. And I think you're doing a great job again this year. So Merry Christmas, everyone.
Thank you very much, Endeavor. So I'll just tell you what's happening tomorrow. It starts at tomorrow. There are four streams as usual. It starts with Faust, a rather opinionated Dutchman, then Martin Lichtmes, an opinionated Austrian, and then Imperium Press, and then The Distributist. So that should be a very interesting quartet of streams tomorrow night. And also there's some news in that James Alsop is now on the schedule. He's going to be at the very end, right after, on the last day after Computing Forever. So James Alsop will close Millennial 2020. So that's something for everyone to look forward to, because he was one of the ones that people have been asking for many times. So, and it was a great conversation that I had with him last year. So I'm looking forward to that. In the meantime, this is the eighth night of Millennial 2020, now ending. So thank you, Endeavour, for taking part. And thank you, everyone, for watching. And I will see you again tomorrow night. Bye for now.